Welcome back to TNT's Will Podcast, the official companion podcast of the TNT series Will. I'm your host, Michael Wood, and with me is the creator and executive producer of Will, Craig Pearce.
Hi, Michael. Great to be back.
So, episode 5.
Yes.
A Marriage of True Minds, which is very ambiguous, isn't it, given the situation Will finds himself
in
at the beginning.
Yes.
With his passionate love for Alice, and then suddenly his wife arrives from Stratford with the kids.
Mm.
Poignant moment.
Reality comes to town. Reality catches up with both Will and Alice and, you know, throws their world into complete disarray. And Alice is confronted by this abstract reality, up to now abstract, of Will's family. And of course, she knows he's married, she knows he has 3 kids, but to be confronted by the living, breathing reality of it is another thing. And the same with Will. I mean, he knows he's transgressing, he probably feels guilty about it, but he's able to shove it, you know, to the back of his mind as something to deal with later. But when Anne and Hamnet, Judith and Susanna arrive in town, he's confronted by, you know, the terrible reality of the mess his life is in, because he's deeply, deeply in love with Alice. He's taken her to a place which isn't going to be good for her, really. And he has to work out what to do about all of that.
Very touching to see the kids, isn't it? We always imagine Shakespeare again, you know, the balding guy with the ruff and the king's man and in all those things. And then suddenly there's the kids running across the stage and squealing with delight. And
He's a young dad.
He's a young dad.
And he loves his kids.
Very, very touching, you know. Mm. I mean, all the more touching when you know the little boy is not going to grow up.
That's right.
They're very poignant.
Well, you know, that's right. And, you know, just to talk more broadly about the time and how we view history, you know, I think there's a feeling when we look into history, you know, people were really harsh on children and they beat them. They didn't really care if they died, because a lot of them died in childbirth or at a very young age. And, of course, some of that's true blandly. But actually, when you look particularly at the way Shakespeare writes about children and parents' love of children in plays like Macbeth, in plays like King John, a little known play, but you know, one of the most beautiful lines, I think, in all of literature is "Death fills up the room with grief of my dead child." I'm paraphrasing badly, but, you know, grief fills up the room. Mm. I mean, such an all-encompassing grief for a dead child.
Yeah. Even the interaction of parents and kids in some of the plays, is, you can see the there's touching.
Cordelia and Leah.
Yeah. Yeah, daughters especially.
Yeah, daughters
He's
especially.
Very, yes. The writing of daughters and fathers is very touching, isn't it? Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think just because they lived 500 years ago, and we shouldn't feel that they didn't feel the way we do, you know.
Absolutely right.
I mean, Chaucer says, you know, they may have lived 1,000 years ago from our time, but they sped as well in love as we do, you know. And,
absolutely.
And they did. And I think that comes over really great in this episode. Mm. It's awful because we watch it, you know, and in the beginning you're looking at the affair with Alice and you're thinking, you know, you kind of you almost want them to get together, you know.
Yeah.
And it's so fantastic. And then when Anne arrives with the kids, it's just it's agonizing, isn't it? The contradiction in his life.
Mm, that's right. And also for Anne as a character who is trying to create a life for herself and her kids with a husband who is in many ways impenetrable because, you know, arguably he's the greatest writer who ever lived, probably quite a conflicted soul in many ways. How can she really reach him? He doesn't want to be back in Stratford, you know, father and of 3 kids and you know, living that provincial life. We know he took it seriously because ultimately he did buy the second biggest house in Stratford, new place, and he bought land in Stratford and, you know, eventually went back there to retire and was very much a hands-on father in many ways. But especially at this point in his life, he doesn't want to be there. either physically or I think mentally. So poor Anne's going, what the hell am I going to do? Because, you know, we can't forget that in her mind, it's like, well, you're doing okay. You live in this tiny little room. It's such a dangerous and uncertain life you're living. Mm. Like, when are you going to get your head back in the real world and come and provide for us?
And you can see, you know, it's obvious, isn't it? He's going to incredible parties. You know, I didn't realize Elizabethan parties were so great, actually, Craig. But
they were.
But you know, and he's still only in his late 20s. You know,
yeah, well, mid 20s.
Yeah. You know, she's sort of
25 years old,
6 years older, or something like that.
Yeah,
and maybe even already
eight years older.
Maybe past childbearing age now. It's funny that they have those three kids early on. That you know. Two of them twins, and then they have no more kids, even though he's only 20 when they're, when they're born, when the twins are born. And you just think, you know, was the complications with the birth? Did she? Yeah. Why didn't they have any more kids? Did the sexual side of their relationship go early on?
Yeah.
But you feel for her when she comes, and she's a very dignified person, isn't she?
Yes.
But the moment she looks into Alice's face and Will's face, she knows everything that's gone on, doesn't she?
That's right. That's right. And how terrible for her to see that, because I think, you know, she must know that there's this side of Will that she doesn't understand and probably will never understand. You know, she probably, you know, quite possibly can't read or write. And, you know, and here is a person who probably she loves, and he, I'm sure, loves her on many levels, but the romantic kind of passionate love is not there anymore, which is not, you know, I think a lot of marriages become that way. But as a partnership, even, she really can't kind of access such a huge part of who he is as a person, and he probably doesn't let her really, because there's probably so many things he can't explain to her. And she just doesn't get on an intrinsic level. But Alice does, because she's grown up in this world, and she understands the creative mind. She's a creative person herself. So there are just so many things that are given and inherent in the way they communicate that he doesn't have to explain. And I think in many ways that's what true love is, you know. A marriage of true minds.
Yeah, that's what Alice sees as well, isn't it? They work together, they collaborate together, they understand each other, they think. And in a sense, Will has left his wife behind, hasn't he? That's the sad thing. You really feel it in that poignant scene, don't you, where he's sitting there in his room and Anne, who's come from Stratford, comes from behind him and puts her arms around him, and he won't go to bed with her. He's just said, I've got to carry on working. And it's just like a terrible curtain coming down, isn't it? You know? Very, very poignant. They're not the only people who are living in kind of contradictions, are they? Because there's an amazing scene in episode 5 where we meet Topcliffe's family. And that's the buttoned up Protestant gentry who have no idea what Dad is up to.
That's right. I really wanted to try and humanize Topcliffe in this episode to an extent, in that, you know, everyone has had a mother. Even the most diabolical people can feel love. And kind of wanted to show Topcliffe's tragedy, perhaps, is his inability to connect with people. And Will's great gift is his ability to connect with people. And I think, you know, you see Topcliffe, he tries to connect with his son, and he really wants to. And he kind of thinks he is, but then he, of course, you know, is shamed by his son when his son can't help but say, stop.
Stop
doing this.
As his psychopathic rage kind of brutalizes some poor victim, and the son screams, stop, stop.
That's right.
And it's true to life of Topcliffe. You know, there are these uncanny stories of him you know, clamped down on the house of some aristocratic family in Derbyshire, and his sudden eruptions of rage as the daughters kind of cross him, you know.
Yes.
So he was like that. There's no question, I think.
Yes.
You may look at that and think this is unbelievable, but there's a truth to life in the darkness of his story.
Absolutely.
So just take us to the end of five, then.
Well, by the end of five, there's Marlowe's journey and his constant seeking for something more, something deeper. There's this increasing feeling with Marlowe that something is going on, something that's preventing him from writing, some block, but also almost a deep, dark secret. He needs to touch death for some reason. We're not really sure. Does he really want to die? Does he have a death wish? I think he does in some sense, but a feeling that he needs to be reborn or to confront death in order to be able to go to the next level of his creativity, but also to confront or reconcile something within his own life that's going on. And right at the end of five, we see, you know, he goes through this ritual, this ceremony in the forest, and coming out of that, there's a feeling of rebirth. And right at the end, he connects with someone we don't really know who he is, but he seems to be a very ill and perhaps dying lover. And Marlowe says, you know, sorry, it's taken me so long to come and see you. And the lover says, that's all right. Death never was your thing. And the feeling that this kind of bravest of characters and most reckless of characters in many ways is actually terrified of death. And there's this person who's very important to him who is facing death, and he's had to go through this extreme ritual to be able to face the reality of this man's mortality. And Will, in a sense, has gone through his own long night of the soul to try and work out what the hell he's going to do. Because on the one hand, he has Alice. On the other hand, he has Anne saying, come home to Stratford and be the husband and father that you have to be, that you've sworn to be. And Will goes through this terrible night, and Alice comes to him and says, I don't care whether you have sex with me or not. We need to be partners. In many ways beyond that, and we can create something incredible together with this theatre and with your work, and you've got to stay in London and write. And right at the end of the episode, Will goes to Anne and says, believe in me, believe in me. I want you to stay here. I want us all to be a family together in London. It's going to be wonderful. And of course, we as an audience know it's going to be terrible. It's never going to work. And I think by the end of episode five, what you're seeing is, you know, I think sometimes in life we make these heartfelt decisions and we think, I'm going to do the right thing and it's all going to work out. But of course, deep down, perhaps, you know, it's not the right thing and it's not going to work out.
But he will create that great company.
He will. He will.
Well, thanks for being with us again, Craig. It's always a total pleasure to hear your thoughts and your imagination. And we'll see you again next week.
That's a pleasure, Michael. See you next week.
Join me next Tuesday for an all-new episode of TNT's Will Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to TNT's Will Podcast in the Apple Podcasts app. And please leave a rating and a review while you're there. And remember, Will is all new Mondays at 9 on TNT. I'm Michael Wood. Thanks for listening.